You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Mention the word rabies, and most people have visions of Cujo, Stephen King's vicious, slobbering rabbit, St. Bernard. If all rabbit animals were that easy to recognize, over 55,000 people annually throughout the world would not fall victim to this fatal disease. What can you do to safeguard your family and your pets? What can you do to make a difference in the lives of children worldwide and save endangered wildlife in Africa? Listen and learn more about this preventable disease and the second annual World Rabies Day. We'll be right back after this short message.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Pick up something unique at A Bone to Pick Dog Boutique. A Bone to Pick has cool hip fashions for big and small dogs that will have their tails wagging in style. Cat products too. ABONE-TO-PICK.com. Check out our eco-friendly pet products and gifts for humans too. ABONE-TO-PICK.com. Get your pet's mouth watering monthly with our Gourmet Treat of the Month Club and join A Bone to Pick's free birthday club for your puppy. ABONE-TO-PICK.com. Pick up something special for your best friend at A Bone to Pick. ABONE-TO-PICK.com. Get 10% off with coupon code PETLIFE.
Hey, all you dog stylists. Are you on the cutting edge of canine design and shaggy chic? Groomer Has It on Animal Planet is now casting for season 2. Groomer Has It is looking for competitive dog stylists with amazing personalities to compete to become Animal Planet's top groomer. $50,000 grand prize for the winner, plus weekly compensation for all contestants during filming. If you have what it takes to be the top groomer, then audition for Groomer Has It today. For more information, contact Catherine at 310-727-3337 extension 71272 or email groomerhasit@gmail.com.
Want to know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Dock. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Well, I'm very fortunate today to have two eminent people who just know tremendous amount about rabies, more so than hopefully any of us ever really want to know. But if we need an expert, these two people are it. First is going to be Peter Costa. He is the Global Communications Coordinator for the Global Alliance for Rabies Control, World Rabies Campaign. And then we also have a veterinarian, Dr. Kathy Hanlon, and she is the director of the Rabies Laboratory at Kansas State University, previously for the CDC. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks, Meredith. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Kathy, I know you have much more in your repertoire of what you've done in the past. Can you give us a little update? You said when you were a sophomore in veterinary school, you got hooked on rabies. How did that happen?
Yeah, when I was in my second year of veterinary school, I was looking for work study, and right down the street with the Wistar Institute, and they have a fairly eminent rabies unit in that institution. And raccoon rabies was just coming into Pennsylvania down near Harrisburg. So I spent that summer between my second and third year of veterinary school live trapping for raccoons, sedating them, taking blood samples, and doing roadkill surveys looking for where rabies was as it was coming into southern part of Pennsylvania.
A lot of people don't think about wild animals having rabies, but before we get into that, maybe, Peter, you could tell us exactly what is rabies?
Yep, thanks, Bernadine. Well, a lot of times when we look at rabies in the United States, a lot of people say, well, why is rabies important? And I think it's interesting to take a back step and talk about why rabies is important. You know, we know that rabies is a viral disease. We know that it can be transmitted to animals and humans. Diseases transmitted mainly by bite. Exposures can occur through contamination of broken skin or mucous membranes with saliva from an infected animal. And when we talk about rabies and we look at why rabies is important, we know that the threat of rabies is global. We know that it is distributed across 6 of the 7 continents. We know that despite other emerging infectious diseases and the fact that rabies is entirely vaccine preventable, people still continue to die and at the rate of one person every 10 minutes. We know that because after thousands of years, rabies continues to have the notorious title of the deadliest disease known to mankind, as rabies has the highest case fatality rate. And we also know that because, sadly, rabies continues to be a disease of the children, with approximately 50 to 65% of rabies victims being children under the age of 15.
That is just a tremendous number of children that are affected. Why is it typically, Dr. Hanlon, that children seem to be most affected by rabies?
Well, it depends upon the country that they're located in, but generally they're the ones engaging their dogs or the street dogs. And certainly they, they're going to and from school, and the dogs in the community are also out there and active. And unfortunately, it's sort of a pack mentality, is that they will be the most vulnerable to dog behavior as far as being susceptible to being likely targets of bites, whereas dogs will be more fearful and more cautious around adults. So just in general, dog behavior, the children are at greater risk for dog bites, and particularly when you have a dog with rabies, they're smaller bodied, they sometimes don't appreciate that the animal may be sick, and they may not have the sense that an adult would have to avoid that animal, and so they tend to be the ones that are bitten. And then, getting to healthcare centers where they can actually get post-exposure biologics, or they may not be able to afford them, and that's where the human rabies cases are still coming from, in places where people can't access healthcare properly or can't afford it.
I know here in the United States, where dog bites really are the highest among young children, especially little boys, because sometimes they're not thinking. They're just out there having a good time. They see this dog. It's cute. They want to approach it. And many times they have not been taught, the proper way to approach an animal, in particular, in this case, approach a dog. There is, you're probably both aware of it, just a great site on the internet called DoggoneSafe.com, and it's a nonprofit organization dedicated to dog bite prevention, and they also have a victim support group. So this is a great way for parents to engage the children to learn and to be able to teach a child how to safely approach a dog, because so many times kids just don't think about it. Oh, cute dog, let's go get it. Right now, Dr. Hanlon, what animals here in the United States can get rabies that we need to be concerned with coming in contact with?
Well, the most important thing for especially pet owners to be aware of, but also other people as well, is that we are virtually surrounded by rabies. We have nearly 7,250 cases of animal rabies in the United States. So sometimes that number is really shocking to people. So of all those animals, what we see is the virus is transmitted among reservoir species. So on the East Coast, it's mainly sustained and mainly in raccoons. So you'll see raccoon to raccoon transmission. Now, each individual raccoon can transmit that to dogs, cats, cows, horses, even people. So that's where we get the risk to the other types of animals. In the Midwest, we have rabies in skunks, mostly in the central states, and also a small area in California. And then we have rabies in bats throughout the entire United States, and in a number of different species of bats. So it's a huge diversity of not only the virus itself, there are a number of different viruses that we can tell apart by laboratory techniques, but there's also a number of species involved. So any interaction with a wild, you know, a wild animal, or even rarely our domestic animals that are positive for rabies, can present a risk for transmission to people. So the number one domestic animal with rabies is cats, our cats. So those we see about almost 300 cases, about 285 cases in cats every year, and only about 85 cases in dogs. We see actually more rabid cows than dogs, as a general rule. They're right about the same.
Now, about a week or two ago, I was reading something that they said that in the United States, canine rabies was eradicated. Is that not true?
Yeah, the canine rabies is a biological term, and what that means is it's a type of rabies virus. We call it either a strain or a virus variant, and those types of strains are maintained dog to dog to dog. We had those in the 1940s, 1950s, but through routine vaccination and mandatory vaccination of dogs in the United States and good animal control laws, those types of rabies viruses went extinct in the United States. So the risk to dogs are now getting it from other species. So they're not getting dog rabies that you can see transmitted dog to dog to dog. So it's a little less of a risk because they're getting raccoon rabies or skunk rabies or bat rabies in these dogs. It's called spillover. And it's still a risk. They can still shed virus. They can still transmit it. But the probability of it actually causing an outbreak is immensely lower than, like, the three cases where we imported dogs from Puerto Rico into Massachusetts. We brought a puppy was brought from India into the West Coast, and another one was brought from Thailand into the West Coast. And those dogs had rabies, that are the traditional dog variants of rabies that could ignite an outbreak in the United States that would be sustained dog to dog to dog. That's much of a greater risk to human beings.
Peter Costa, the Global Communications Coordinator for this alliance, could you give us, it seems like it would be very straightforward. You're over in Thailand, you're in Mexico, you're someplace, and you see this little dog going, I think I'll, instead of getting a postcard and taking it home, I'm going to be the really good Samaritan, and I'm going to bring this dog back to the United States and make it my pet. Aren't there overt signs that these dogs have rabies?
Dr. Hanlon, would you like to cover that regarding the signs of rabies?
Yeah, usually during the incubation period, so an animal can be exposed to rabies and then goes through an incubation period. That incubation period can vary. It can be as little as 9 days, but typically it's several weeks to several months. During that period of time, the animal appears entirely normal. It's only when the virus has reached the brain and the virus is then starting to come out in the saliva, then the animal is infectious, and that's when it develops clinical signs. That's when you can tell that it's sick. That's when it's transmitting. So that time right before it, the dog looks normal, but it's at risk for breaking with rabies and then exposing people. So unfortunately, you can even get a physical exam and get a health certificate for an animal because at that time it looks normal. But when you move it, if you haven't subjected it to some sort of waiting period, or if you haven't immunized it and then waited for an adequate waiting period, then you're still at risk for bringing an incubating animal and moving it around the world.
Dr. Hanlon, you mentioned cats being the greatest source of rabies now in the United States, or the most affected domestic pet. Why cats? Are they more susceptible to the rabies, or why are we seeing such a large number in them?
It's hard to track how many cats or what proportion of the cat population is immunized against rabies, but from some limited data, what we understand is that maybe 70%, 60 or 70 or 80% of dogs are vaccinated against rabies, but only probably 30 to 40% of cats are immunized against rabies. So number one, they're less frequently vaccinated than dogs. And then number two, they tend to be less well supervised if they are let outdoors. You know, they're not typically held in a fenced-in backyard. They're let out to roam, so they tend to you know, be very comfortable in at night, so they have much more opportunity to tangle with our nocturnal carnivores, the raccoon, the skunk, and also bats as well. Even an indoor cat can be affected because bats find their way into our homes, and sometimes raccoons crawl down chimneys, sometimes skunks come in through cat doors. So even the house cat is still at potential risk for exposure. The biggest thing that pet owners need to know is if their pet is not currently vaccinated and they suffer a real exposure to rabies or a potential exposure to rabies, that animal, the recommendation is going to be euthanasia or a six-month quarantine if they're not currently vaccinated. That is what surprises people because they just don't realize there's that much rabies around. And the reason for that six-month quarantine or euthanasia is because that animal is at risk for developing rabies for the next 6 months. So your pet cat that wasn't currently vaccinated that tangled with a bat that was proven rabid, for the next 6 months, it's at risk for developing rabies if it wasn't currently vaccinated. If it's currently vaccinated, all you have to do is have a physical exam, have the veterinarian give it a booster, watch it for 45 days, and it'll, you know, by and large, it's protected against rabies.
That is amazing because it's one of the things I will always in my practice recommend that people say, well, it's totally an indoor cat. I don't want to vaccinate it for rabies. Why do I need to? And having that type of information to explain to them why it's so desperately important, because the only way you're going to be able to diagnose it, you know, for sure is, can you tell us how for sure you're going to diagnose that rabies? What's the gold standard for the diagnosis of rabies?
Unfortunately, the gold standard is inside the brain, so we need to euthanize the animal and take brain samples from deep inside the brain. That's not a very pleasant thing for a pet owner to go through. So it's really important to keep them vaccinated and to provide them good supervision and keep them away from these risks out there.
That's just the horrid thought of having to do a brain biopsy. It's just terrible for pet owners and anyone to think about. Peter Costa, could you tell us a little bit about how great is the risk of rabies to humans in other parts of the world?
Sure. The risk is elevated in different parts of the world and for many different reasons. You know, we talk about vaccinating pets and we talk about education, and in many parts of the world, those two elements, those important elements, are not available or are not embraced. Just to give some specific examples, in certain countries you may have certain cultural or religious or even spiritual beliefs that may deter different individuals and families from taking preventive measures. Many times there's not accessibility to post-exposure prophylaxis and biologicals or even pre-exposure vaccines. And again, that not being available or not being accessible, similar with vaccine availability. Additionally, different locations throughout the world may have different proximities to wildlife. And most recently, what we've encountered throughout the world in different countries are local superstitions against rabies and dogs, particularly rabies and guard dogs, where in different cultures, different localities, dogs that are vaccinated against rabies are they're understood to be less aggressive and therefore not as effective of a guard dog.
And we should say that it has nothing to do with the behavior of whether or not you're going to be a good guard dog. It is amazing.
Absolutely.
Superstitions that are out there. Is it? Can you address the precautions? Here we get so used to seeing the dogs, cats, the United States basically being healthy and not a health risk to us. People from the United States wanting to travel outside of the United States and going to some of these countries where there are rabid dogs. What countries in particular should we take extra care?
Yeah, virtually all of, you know, many, many, many of the countries in Asia, the countries in Africa, even in some of the countries in the Middle East. Really, whenever one travels, you should never approach, avoid wildlife. Observe them, enjoy them from a distance. That's the golden rule. And whenever you're traveling, you really should not engage domestic animals unless the owner is there and unless you feel comfortable with that situation, because you are taking a risk engaging any animal throughout the world. I mean, people move animals, so the risk is ever present, but it is substantially greater in Africa and in Asia.
And I know I'm one of those pet owners that when I start traveling, I'm away from my own pets. I can go usually about 2 days, and then I start going through animal withdrawal. And I'm just as bad when I'm traveling. I see a little dog or a cat out there, and I will seek it out to go ahead and love it and touch it. And it's like, that's probably not the safest thing for me to do. What should someone do if they're ever bitten by an animal and they have no idea whether or not it's rabid or it's an infected state of some other reason?
Well, anywhere in the world?
Sure, anywhere in the world.
Right. Well, usually the local health authorities, if there's a reasonable infrastructure in a country, the local health authorities are generally the best acquainted with what the risks are in their locality. For example, in the United States, our local county health, the public health nurses, the environmental officers are often the very best people to go to for assessing the risk from a particular animal exposure. And in the United States, our state public health veterinarians are really the authority for guidance to the local health authorities. And then if need be, can go up to the national level as well. And so the same infrastructure exists in many other countries where you have local experts, your local health network, and then somewhat of a provincial level and then a national level. And certainly an American traveler can always check with the embassy because there are health officers on duty. So that is sometimes very, very helpful in identifying the risk and potentially making arrangements if you need to go out of country to get treatment or go to a specific large city to get treatment. They would have the information that they can give you.
And how is rabies treated in humans?
With a potential exposure to rabies, and generally that is the biggest risk is by bite, that wound needs to be washed as soon as possible with as clean a water as you can find. Anybody developing rabies, that alone substantially reduces the risk of rabies developing even without further treatment, but that's the most critical thing you can do first. Then you need to consult with the appropriate health authorities, and it's an urgent situation. It's not an emergency, but it's an urgent situation. So within hours, you really need to be presenting ideally at a health clinic, a hospital, and talking about what is the species, what are the risks in the area, and then if it really is an exposure, then you need human rabies post-exposure prophylaxis. That has two components. It has a series of vaccines, and then one dose of what is called human rabies immune globulin. And basically, that's just antibodies. So those are preformed, ready-to-go antibodies against rabies that can immediately bind the virus at the site of where the person was exposed, so at the site of the bite. So that's inoculated at the site of the bite. It's a human product. It's from other people who have been screened and make health checks, and the product itself is screened for viral agents and other agents. And then it's also sort of pasteurized. It's heated to a high degree or ultra filtrated. So it's an excellent product, but it's needed for immediate protection against rabies. So that's given as soon as possible at the site of the exposure. The series of vaccines should ideally start along with that, with one dose in the arm, just like a flu shot. And that's followed up with, so that's day zero, and then followed up with four more shots, day 3, day 7, day 14, and day 28. It takes about 7 to 10 days for your body to make your own antibodies. So the HRIG, the human rabies immune globulin, is an essential component to provide immediate protection and to neutralize some of that virus that was deposited at that site right away before your body can respond to vaccination.
Now, you'd mentioned, Dr. Hanlon, getting the injection in your arm. I think we've all heard the horror stories of the injections that are given into your belly. Are they no longer given that way?
That's correct. They are not. Those types of vaccines, there still are about 3 or 4 countries in the world today that still use, they're called brain tissue vaccines, basically. So it's vaccines that contain immunogenic components that are made from the brains of animals. So animals are infected with rabies, their brain is harvested, and that's used as a vaccine. It's not very potent, it's not very concentrated, and so we used to have to inject huge volumes of it, a tablespoonful, and it needed to go, so it went subcutaneously underneath the skin, across the stomach wall, because it would fit there and wouldn't hurt too badly, but it did hurt.
That definitely sounds like we've gotten much better in treating this. And I know when I was in veterinary school, I was vaccinated for rabies and periodically will get my titer checked to make sure that I'm still protected. But it's always a concern. We're going to be taking a short break, coming right back, and we're going to be talking to Peter Costa about World Rabies Day. What is it and what can we do to help promote the eradication of rabies and the control of rabies throughout the world? We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Fluff your feathers, roll out your tongue, shine your fins, snap on your leashes, and grab your human. It's the Louisville Pet Lovers Expo. Two full days of pet-tastic fun that no pet lover should miss. Join us for shopping, the Barks and Couture Fashion Show, Dream Pet Wedding, Ultimate Pet Makeover, Pet Communicator, Rescue Me Pet Adoption, Service Dog Demonstration, and tons of fun contests. Bring your pets and join us at the Louisville Pet Lovers Expo, Saturday, September 27th, and Sunday, September 28th at the Kentucky Expo Center. For more information, go to LouisvillePetExpo.com.
Pet Life Radio presents Paranormal Pets, where you can always expect the unexpected. Each week, we'll discuss all aspects of weird or spiritual animal encounters, ghosts, totems, psychic animals, animal souls, animal angels, and animals in religion, with a little cryptozoology thrown in. Step into the supernatural world of pets with your Paranormal Pets ghostly host, Dusty Rainbolt, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Well, we've been having a very interesting conversation with Peter Costa. He is the coordinator for the World Rabies Day, and Dr. Kathy Hanlon, she's from Kansas State and is a world-renowned expert in rabies. Peter, what is World Rabies Day? When did this come about?
Good question, Bernadine. World Rabies Day is really a unified show of support for anti-rabies efforts. The campaign arose as a day of action, really, to raise awareness and bring together hundreds of thousands of people, from health experts to really just everyday people. The campaign advocates for the improved health of the total population, human and animal, through a one medicine approach. And it's a unique campaign. It's the only worldwide event of its kind focused on global rabies control and prevention.
This is amazing. So it is not just the United States that's involved in this. This really is a worldwide effort.
That's correct. Last year, we actually saw participation from 74 countries around the world. This year, we have seen inquiries come in to the World Rabies Day website from 180 countries around the world. So this campaign has grown exponentially, and I think that that's a good indication of the show of need for some kind of unifying support, a unifying campaign such as World Rabies Day to combat rabies control and prevention.
What organizations, can you give us an example that have gotten involved in this here in the United States at least?
Sure. We actually have several partners throughout the United States. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention came on board very early and actually helped co-sponsor and launch the World Rabies Day campaign. Additionally, we have support through the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association. We have support from many private and also non-governmental organizations. And most recently, we see many non-profit organizations coming on board in the United States and abroad, really, that have all been associated with dog bite prevention, rabies control, or animal welfare. And so now World Rabies Day has unified this community and brought everybody on board in a unified, having a unified role that we can all move forward with one common mission.
You mentioned the One World, One Health, One Medicine kind of initiative that's out there right now. I think this is so important because so many people don't realize that veterinarians, and of course I'm a bit on the prejudice side being a veterinarian, but veterinarians really are ones that are concerned with the health of humans as well as animals, in many respects how that affects our entire world and our environment. So this is a way that your veterinarian is taking care of your health, your pet, and that of the world. What can be done by people wanting to get involved, at least here on the local level?
Oh, there's many ways to get involved, particularly at the local level where this kind of information and education is really the most important. Oftentimes we see local health departments or animal control agencies supporting or sponsoring rabies low-cost vaccination clinics. These are prime opportunities for us to really provide the rabies awareness and education material to our one of our most important target audiences, pet owners. What we have seen in the past is we've seen anything from pet parades, we've seen individuals having runs for rabies, walks for rabies, we've had belly dancing for rabies, we've had concerts, different festivals, really just all different ways to get involved. One large component and one major component of the North American campaign last year was the vet schools in the United States. 24 of the 28 schools came on board and held events last year, anything from symposiums to educational seminars, again, a run for rabies, and really helped educate not only their faculty and their students, but they really did a great job to bring members of the community on board, as well as collaborating with local organizations such as humane societies and animal control shelters.
I think a lot of people think that veterinarians and their local animal control are recommending rabies, not because they're really concerned about protecting the animals, but because, you know, they just want to get their licensing fee and they just want more money and they just want to have Big Brother looking in my backyard and in my house to see how many pets I have. But there truly is a health reason for the pet as well as for the pet owner and for the community to have these animals vaccinated. So this is important. When is World Rabies Day?
World Rabies Day is observed officially on September 28th annually, but we always promote that rabies, rabies prevention is important throughout the year. So of course we see events held throughout the year, but the single date of observance is September 28th.
What events? You mentioned some things that are going on locally, so people have runs and they'll have walks and symposiums. Are there any international events being coordinated for this World Rabies Day?
Yes, absolutely. Not only do we see events being held at the United States Colleges of Veterinary Medicine, but we see them held throughout the world. For instance, last year we had actually about 25 colleges of veterinary medicine in other countries holding events. This year we have reports just throughout the world. Just in India, for example, we have 15 colleges of veterinary medicine. And when we talk about the One Health approach, we also have 3 medical colleges actually coming on board to hold rabies awareness events. There's multiple kinds of events planned. For instance, in Colombia, there's a 2-month free rabies vaccination clinic that's going to be held. There will be a lot of workforce education actually taking place this year that we did not see last year. Just to give you an example, here in the U.S., certain pet stores will be holding workforce education in their stores throughout the week of World Rabies Day. abroad. Different industries will be holding workforce education. They'll be having educational seminars. They're also going to be distributing some World Rabies Day posters throughout their staff. So not only are we seeing the traditional World Rabies Day runs, so to speak, but we're also starting to see the educational component move into the workforce. And so we're seeing some of these, some of our partners and some of these organizations really embrace the need for rabies awareness and education and taking it as their own and providing it not only throughout their localities but also in their workforce.
Peter, could you address the Serengeti project that's going on?
I actually cannot speak to that specifically because I'm not as familiar with that project. And I'm not sure, Dr. Hamlin, if you might have more knowledge on that specific program.
Within the Alliance for Rabies Control, there, one of the founders of it is Sarah Cleveland. And so she has worked in Tanzania for a number of years, along hand-in-hand with this with the corporate partner, InterVet, that has supported a number of vaccination campaigns and research in that area of the world. So it's a major outreach to control rabies in dogs for the protection of endangered carnivores.
So as I understand what this project is, it's Sharing Plow InterVet will donate a dose of rabies vaccines to this project whenever their vaccine, which is called a continuum canine or feline rabies, is given here in the United States until the end of December 2008. But why is it important there in the Serengeti? How does it make a difference if, as I understand, the doses that are being offered there to the Serengeti, it's to vaccinate the local canine population? So is this just to protect the humans, or what is the tie-in?
It's to protect the humans, and it's to protect the local population of other animals, but also particularly the wild carnivores in the ecological parks that are there. So it's a conservation effort, primarily.
So you can really do a lot of good for the Serengeti, because so many people love seeing these National Geographic specials that are done there in Africa and seeing the wildlife. And many times they don't realize that here these village dogs can have a major impact on these animals. So how we can do something here locally to help our environment, to help an ecosystem world's way. If somebody wanted, Peter, to learn more about this World Rabies Day, where can they go?
The best spot for comprehensive information, Bernadine, is on our website, www.worldrabiesday.org. And the website is just has a ton of information. We're actually seeing over 3,000 hits per day come to the website, which is going to escalate as we move closer to World Rabies Day. But on the website, there's just all kinds of information from how you can get involved, where events are maybe in your locality. You can download information. You can download the World Rabies Day logo. There's an education bank that has information for all kinds of different target groups. For instance, if you're a school teacher and you'd like to talk about rabies in your school, you can download presentations. If you're just a member of the public and you just want some basic information, prevention information, there's leaflets with information. There's leaflets from the AVMA on there, dog bite prevention from Dog on Safe, as we spoke about earlier. And there's even information for media, talking points, press releases, and photos. So I think it's really our hub of communication.
And something to keep in mind with regards to international impact, the veterinary students last year, so people can go on the website right now and look up events that are located potentially near them. They're listed by state and then locality, so they can look those up. And actually, they can use Google Map to page around the Earth and see where all the pinpoints are, so it's lots of fun. Last year, the student events, they did a little fundraising, so they did collect a little bit of money, gather some resources. They put them all together. They donated this money, made it available for rabies prevention and awareness on a global scale, and Veterinarians Without Borders in Canada matched the funds that the veterinary students in North America had raised. So that was two little bits of money that was put together. So we put out a call for proposals, and we received over 45 proposals. The cap was $10,000. We received over 45 proposals from 18 different languages and from 18 different countries in four different languages. It was just immense. Over $500,000 requested funding. So we assembled very quickly. We got a retired physician who's been a strong advocate for us. We invited him on the evaluation team, And when he saw the need that was described in these projects, he was able to elicit a private donation too, so that we could fund even more projects this year and potentially for next year as well. So right now this year we are funding rabies prevention education in Peru, Guatemala, Kenya, Vietnam, and China. And that's directly a result of the veterinary students in North America acting locally, raising money, Veterinarians Without Borders matching that in a private donation as well. So if there is an event, or if people want to stage an event, that's precisely what they're doing. They're acting locally for global impact.
And if people wanted to donate directly, where can they go?
Okay, if they want to donate, there's actually a donate tab on the World Rabies Day website. You can click on the donate tab. And what we're actually working to do right now is to actually set aside specific areas that people can donate to. And by areas, I mean if there's a certain country or if there's a certain project that may be of interest, such as providing vaccines to a certain country or providing educational materials to a certain country, that's something that we're actually working on implementing right now. And so if anybody is interested in donating, they can, that can easily be stated. We would like this donation to go towards educational support in, Ghana, Africa, or whatever it may be, to Vietnam, or to the program in China. And what we can do is we can then channel that into the specific programs that are going on around the world. And there is need. I mean, part of the World Rabies Day, the largest part of this campaign is the communications. And so oftentimes we see inquiries come in that say, we're implementing such a program, we just need another $600, or we just need a few hundred dollars, or maybe just some vaccine. And so to be able to actually take a donation and direct it to these countries of specific need is something that we're working towards right now.
Well, this is marvelous. Hopefully the pet owners that are listening to the Pet Doctor today on Pet Life Radio will realize why it's so important to vaccinate their own pets, to get involved locally, and this local action can really have a worldwide impact. We've been talking today with Peter Costa, the Global Communications Coordinator, Global Alliance for Rabies Control, World Rabies Campaign, and Dr. Kathy Hanlon, Director of Rabies Laboratory at Kansas State University. Hopefully you learned a little bit today, because that has always been the goal of this particular show, to educate, to entertain a little bit, and to also make you aware of the best way that you can enjoy your pet and your pet can enjoy life with you. If you have any questions about your own pet's health, whether or not you should vaccinate your pet for a particular disease, the best person to ask is always going to be your primary care veterinarian. But if you'd like some additional advice, please feel free to contact me at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. Thank you so much for being with us. Tune in next week for some more information. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.